There we go.
I can send you an information sheet afterwards just about how I might use the recording, and then if I ask you something that you don't want to answer, just say you don't want to, and that's fine. Yeah. We can move on, and you can, you know, tell me to go away at any point as well. Okay, cool. Do you mind if I ask you some questions about yourself there? Okay. Okay, amazing. Okay, so how about we start with a bit about yourself? How old you are, where you're from, how you kind of came to be where you are at the moment.
Okay, I'm 47. I'm half English, half Irish. I came to this region of southern France about 18 years ago. I didn't have a clue about any of it. I came out here to teach, quite reluctantly, a Kundalini yoga retreat. Because back then, that's what I was, a Kundalini yoga teacher. And within a few hours of being here, I realized there was something very familiar about this land. It felt like home. I was very, very comfortable being here. And by the time the yoga retreat was over, the last thing I wanted to do was fly back to England. I just wanted to stay. And so I started to research what this area was all about. And I realized that there was a strong legend and story that Mary Magdalene came here after fleeing from Jerusalem back in the days just after the crucifixion. And then later on, centuries later, a whole bunch of people sort of sprung up as part of her lineage, and they were known as the Cathars. So they were like a Christian group of people, but following the ways of Mary Magdalene. And then in the medieval times, these Cathars were exterminated, a great big crusade was sent out against them. So slowly, piece by piece, I was starting to understand, because I was very much into Mary Magdalene, I was very much into Jesus, Mary Magdalene, and Gnostic Christianity, so the mystical part of Christianity. And by the time I'd researched, I knew this is home. And if there is such a thing as a past life, I've definitely lived here before. But to me, past lives don't really mean too much. All I know is I had to live here again. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And up until that point, I was a free spirit. I didn't even own a home. I didn't want a home. I was literally a traveling yogini, going wherever the invitation sent me. But as soon as I knew about this place, my marker was made on the earth, on the map, this is where I want to live. And so, I did. I have part-time, I'm here half the year, introducing people to the places that I found, and as I said at the beginning of the call, today we've been caving. So I don't like to just take people, you know, the superficial places, which there are many, there's many sacred sites, it's like Glastonbury and Stonehenge around here. But I like to give people a real experience. So the best way of doing that is to actually sleep the night in these places. Mm-hmm. Sleep in the cave, sleep in the battlements of a Cathar chateau, sleep in a fairy woodland. Then you'll start, you know, having a few experiences. Mm-hmm. Ones that you just can't deny, and they last with you for your whole lifetime.
Mm.
And so when it comes to Tantra, I would say it's that lineage that I'm following.
Okay, what do you mean by the lineage there?
Well, sometimes people say Tantra and they think of like deities from India, like Shakti and Dakinis and all of that kind of Hindu-based form of Tantra. Because rightly, that's where it comes from the East. But then, you know, as it developed and moved around all over the globe, there was another form of Tantra that kind of emerged in Egypt, which then re-emerged in ancient Judea, Israel, which is kind of like the version I'm into, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Mary Magdalene, if you... You just have to scratch the surface of Mary Magdalene to realize that she was some form of tantric priestess.
Mm-hmm.
And that she, in my opinion, absolutely having a sexual union with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And that is how, you know, I feel very much they did what they did together. She prepared his body for that level of initiation. That's quite a controversial subject.
It is. I haven't heard that link before. I mean, I haven't interviewed that many people, but this is really, really fascinating for me. So if I had to ask you a very broad question, how would you describe your tantra?
Holy.
Holy.
But when I say holy, I don't necessarily mean religious. When I say holy, I mean what some forms of religion were trying to exterminate. I believe back in the days of Jesus and, you know, the early beginnings of Christianity, women, priestesses, were very much playing an active role in giving people a doorway to experience profound bliss energies, ecstasy, real union with the divine. And it was all done via the body, what we know as Tantra. And that was very severely pushed underground. So by the time, you know, Christianity is now officially formed and is being documented and people are being converted, that part, the feminine part, is gone. It's not there. And suddenly Mary Magdalene is known as a prostitute and a harlot, and that she was, like, you know, quite a diseased and wretched woman, when in fact, in my heart, she was an absolute queen, an elegant, dignified, well-educated, wealthy lady of mystical arts. So that's the form I'm into. And when I express this tantra is a full tantric union. Sometimes I look at tantra now, you know, in our countries, in the West, and it seems a little bit fixated on sex only. And back in the days in the East, it wasn't sex only, and definitely whatever Mary Magdalene was representing, it wasn't sex only. Sexuality was included, gorgeously so, but so was the full opening of the heart, the full opening of the soul, and sacred action. So you're not going around having these gorgeous experiences with other beings just for your own pleasure. You're doing it to awaken something and then absolutely give back to the community.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's tantra. It's very wholesome. It's very good. It's very, it's well-meaning. It's not like, oh, how many orgasms can I have? And do I have this endless erection? And I call that neo-tantra.
I've heard that term used every so often, yeah.
But you've got to start somewhere. There's so many steps and stages on the tantric path. Mm-hmm. And if it's neo-tantra that gets you on the path, so be it. But you'll soon realize that there's more.
Mm-hmm.
Not you, I mean, you know, people, listeners, readers, whoever's going to read your paper, mm-hmm. there's more. Yeah.
So how about in your everyday life, kind of how do you express your beliefs, and how does it, or kind of what actions would you do to?
I guess now, because it's just been part of me for so long, it's expressed, this kind of like loving union is expressed with everything. My cat, my beloved partner, my garden, you know, the flowers that are just starting to show themselves. Everything I touch, I do my utmost to beautify it. Not because I want to appreciate its beauty, because I want every single person that should cross its path to appreciate its beauty. It's just such a natural way of life now that, you know, whenever I meet people, all I want to do is include them. You're included. You're not a lemon. You're not out there on the periphery. Come in. Everything Everything about me and my home and my lifestyle is inclusive. So it's kind of like, it's that far reaching now. Back at the beginning, I was very much interested in the sexual union only, like I said, step one, neo-tantra. And then that spread, and now it's just everywhere. Mm-hmm. An inclusive, warm, welcoming, golden invitation.
So how did you develop from the kind of first stages, or like the neo-tantra stage? How did you personally develop yourself?
I would say my physical body, when I was a kid, I saw a tantric being when I was 7 years old on the steps of Sakrika. As only a child, I saw this amazing man. He looked like a beggar. He looked like he was sat on the steps of this cathedral begging for something. So I ran over to him and he lifted up his face. And his eyes were on fire with gorgeous, what I would call roomy love. And all I wanted to do was stay with him. I was like, in love. But not in love as in, this is my family. I recognized him. I didn't want to let go. And that was a tantric experience. This was not regular love. This wasn't a nice smile or, you know, a little wink of the eye. This was a full transmission. So that was that part. Years later, when I'm in my late 20s, I start doing Kundalini yoga, which is a tantric form of yoga. Now suddenly the body is waking up. And so when you're working with a lot of Kundalini energy, it's very sexual. It's very sexual on purpose, because you're looking to use the sexual energy to create a strong force to open up all the chakras. So sexuality first, next stage heart, next stage soul. So I've got a lot of sexual energy flying around my system. And of course, I'm 27, 28. I'm still ready to go. So I start looking for tantra, because I've got to do something with this. So I went to a few tantric circles in London, and it wasn't very nice. I could feel there was a heavy expectation in the group. Mm-hmm. It felt a little bit like raincoat territory. Do you know what I mean by raincoat?
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Shifting in there, and it was like people were there just for a quick feel. And to see whether they could, like, cop off with someone for the night. So I was like, okay, maybe not this group. So I tried many times, maybe even five different tantric circles in London. And every time I went, it was the same thing. Dodgy. A bit like, ew, there's something sticky in the air and no one seems to notice but me. And I just didn't like it. And so I left it at that. And I thought, maybe it's just Britain. Maybe it's just England. Let's see what the Americans are up to. Same thing. And so then that left me with the realization, what I'm looking for, I'm not finding. Mm-hmm. But I know in my heart, because I saw it on the steps of Sacré-Cœur when I was 7, I know in my heart what this energy is. I'm going to have to just be really big and brave and open my own circle and gathering and invite beloved friends to the circle. But I was too scared to do such a thing because I'm only a Kundalini yoga teacher. You know, what am I going to do? I knew what to do in my head. But there was no way I was brave enough to do that. No way. So I waited until I was 40. And by the time 40 rolled in, I'm still too scared. Because what I wanted to do, I wanted to just get down to basics and work with ladies and nakedness. Because I could remember in my mind these practices that Mary Magdalene was doing. But I'm British. There's a heck of a lot of sexual conditioning in British people. And You know, I have these images of tending to a woman's body in naturalness and nakedness to help her awaken her Shakti so that she can be with her beloved partner and go on a very deep journey together.
Mm-hmm.
So I said to myself, when I'm 40, I should be brave enough. I should have the courage to do this. 40 came, no. And only when I was 45, only 2 years ago, I came back from Israel. There was quite a few initiations that happened there, and I just knew, I'm ready, I don't care. Judge me, humiliate me, condemn me, do what you like. I'm doing this. I must do this because if I don't, I'm going to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something so fiery inside. And in my opinion, so pure, so innocent, but very powerful, that I simply went, okay, I'm doing this, and it's called Sacred Body Awakening. And the ladies came flocking. And it literally was an overnight, not even success, that's the wrong word, an overnight awakening.
Mm-hmm.
And I went everywhere with it. Britain, America, Canada, France, obviously. And at first the ladies were scared. I explained what we would be doing, and they were like, what? You're having a laugh. And I said, you've got to trust me on this, ladies. It's going to feel so natural. You're going to wonder why you've never done this before. And it was absolutely true. Everyone felt so comfortable, so natural, and it was like discovering a long-lost friend.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, in a nutshell, that's how it all happened.
This is great. So in the sessions that you started doing a couple of years ago, what would you do in such sessions?
Well, again, everything seems to be coming from my imagination. I knew this wasn't a one-on-one session. It was three. It was made up of three women. Two women totally tending to another one. And the best way I can describe it is slow, voluptuous, deep feeling, sensual, slightly erotic massage with full wakeful presence. Nothing untoward, no going into the yoni, nothing like that. But no denying, the ladies are touching the ladies to absolutely awaken their deep soul heart pleasure in their body. And because we're women, and because it doesn't even matter whether you're gay or straight, there's a different agenda in the room. We're women. We can't even do much, you know. There's only so far we can go. And what I noticed in that is that women can't relax because nothing too far can happen. You know, you're simply with your own kind, and this beautiful sisterhood awakens, and you're simply there to very decently and very elegantly fully awaken the pleasure with sincere love and care, so all blended at the same time, with great skill. We all know how to awaken the feminine body because we're inside one.
Mm-hmm.
We secretly know what feels incredible. And so if you can imagine that with candles and music and essential oil, and we've all been in a sharing circle before we do anything, everything is fully permitted. The moment anything feels a bit strange, you just put your hand up. Incredible.
Mm.
And do you know what? You only have to receive it once. It was an instant awakening.
Mm. How would you describe the feeling of that awakening, of that pleasure?
When you first experience, you cannot help but cry from beauty. Beauty and remembering, and then like grieving the loss of how long it's been since we've done anything like that. Mm-hmm. It's been centuries. Centuries since women felt that trustable within another woman's company. So it was so healing at the level of the heart. It was so healing. Mm-hmm. It healing, safe, elegant, holy, mystical, intimate. So close. You just felt so sincerely close to another woman. And it didn't have that weird energy that I call the raincoat. It didn't have that weirdness. There was weirdness in the room. It was just natural. It's like ducks. Ducks are most natural on water. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, ladies are most natural when they are sensual, being beautiful, being playful, and being joyful. The problem is when we get up here, mm-hmm. being too much in our bloody heads. As soon as we start playing around and having a good laugh, we're natural again.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that leads on to my next question about femininity and womanhood. How do you see that?
Well, even though I'm 47, I'm still very young in heart. And that is obvious. That's a part of the feminine spirit I'm holding. This childlikeness. And this is one of the things I absolutely adore in the feminine, which can be in men and women. It's this playfulness, this spontaneity. Don't take life or yourself too seriously. You can still play. You can still see the magic everywhere. Then there's another part which is coming in now, quite in a widespread way. The feminine spirit, the feminine presence is also here to comfort. She's to console and comfort. And obviously, you know, we're starting to hear a lot about Donald Trump and American politics and Brexit and all of that stuff. Feminine spirit must come in and balance this. I've come away from Facebook in the last month, but I remember every day there would be a barrage of posts about Donald Trump. Now, as ladies, we must balance out that media news with deep feeling comfort, with good food, with massage, with playfulness, with going out in the forest barefoot. We must. Because if we just stay focused on Facebook, we're just going to fry our brains with anxiety and nervousness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's true.
And I'll drop in there a nice little bit of dressing up. Dressing up in a theatre. That's the feminine spirit. No, many more qualities, but that's the only ones I can, you know, truly with experience speak about.
Okay, so how have your views about your own body changed over time?
Well, I'm only 5'2.5". All I have to do is look at a packet of crisps and I've put on weight. There's a packet right here, actually. I guess if you was to describe my figure, it's kind of voluptuous. Sometimes it gets a little bit too swollen, and then sometimes I have to do a bit of fasting and trim it down again. But I must say, I have had such an intimate relationship with my body and how it's appearing. And when I was a young lady in my 20s, my whole mood would be dictated by how I thought my body looked. Is it slim? It's a good day. Have I put on weight? Oh my God, it's a bad day. And my whole personality would crumble depending on what shape the body was in. When I got into my 30s and co-wrote the book Womb Wisdom, that's when I started to bring a lot of attention to my womb, which is obviously my abdomen. And I realized, oh my God, this area is the big area that's been taking all of these judgments. Like, my tummy is flat, it's a good day. My tummy is swollen, it's a really bad day. So my womb has been getting that daily, maybe even twice, three times, four times daily, judgment. And I went, oh, I have to stop right now. Because the absolute powerhouse of my femininity is behind this gorgeous rounded tummy. But in all absolute truth, I will only say, only in my 40s did I actually stop that.
Mm-hmm.
Enough self-love was on board. I still look. I would be a fibber if I said I didn't look at myself every morning in a full-length mirror. But I must say, hand on heart, I do not hear anything. I do not hear any dialogue, but I am looking. So I have had a daily, interactive relationship with my figure, with the way I look, you know, all of my feminine attributes. And 50-50. Sometimes I'm happy, sometimes I'm not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I must say that there's not a part of me that I go, oh, I hate that part of me. And there's, and you know, also, I'm not a natural beauty. It's not as if I'm one of those willowy types that, you know, causes car accidents. But I must say, I have been blessed with what I call a heart presence. I think that is what shines. If anyone was to say, oh, she's a lovely, attractive lady, I do believe it's the heart that they're picking up on,
mm-hmm.
rather than the physical form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've always felt quite loving. Even when I was a kid, I was absolutely shy, really, really shy, didn't want to hang out with anyone. But when I was hanging out with people at school, I just really loved them. I loved them and I cared about them and I wanted everyone to just play together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there was something, even as a kid, something loving going on in there.
Yeah. Yeah. How about your views about your own sexuality as well? How have they developed?
This is the area I've really played in. So I, when I was a teenager, I didn't experiment with alcohol, didn't experiment with any drugs, no dope, no acid or whatever was going on in those days. Certainly wasn't interested in making money or striking deals or, you know, ducking and diving. The only thing that interested me was sexuality. I loved dressing up, and I loved the power that that brought. When I left school, I went to art college. When I left art college, I went to fashion university and did a degree in fashion, like you, but fashion design. So I really discovered the power of the appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And then I discovered gay people, because obviously most of the guys at fashion school were gay. And then I realized just how flamboyant their characters were. I'm coming from Newbury, I've never met a gay person. So now suddenly I am hanging out for 3 years with these amazing characters who are very, very gay, very colorful, great sense of humor. And now I'm starting to go clubbing in London. So I'm at Heaven and Soho and Camden, and I'm doing like 3 clubs a night.
Uh-huh.
Eating the most varied type of London nightlife.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've left Newbury. I'm free now. So I'm just going for it. I am, you can't even classify me anymore. I'm gay, straight, bisexual, transvestite, everything is happening. And I never went too far, because the thing is, I saw that man on the steps of Sacré-Cœur when I was 7, and a little flame went on inside my heart. And as much as I was having, I mean, I was quite outrageous. I was getting off with people left, right, and center. But when it actually got to, you know, the crunch moment, are we actually going to have sex or not? I'd always pull back, because I knew in my heart there was a little flame burning. Don't go there. Don't go there. And this is the time of AIDS. You know, it's the 90s. AIDS is really strong, HIV really strong, and I just, right at the last minute, which must have annoyed so many people, right at the last minute, I pull back and literally do an amazing disappearing act. But I must admit, I enjoyed every single step of the process, and I tried being gay, and that didn't feel quite right, but I liked the shock tactics. That was good fun. And I remember going home and telling my mum and dad. It was a Sunday. Mum was making Sunday lunch. Dad was reading the newspapers. And I came in, you know, very flamboyant, just got off the train from London. I said, "Mum, Dad, I have some news for you. I'm gay." And Dad kind of went, "Ah, oh, that's nice." And I don't think Mum even flinched. Because at this point, they're so used to, you know, the colour and the artistry of their daughter is going through some very strange changes. And I was like, shit, that didn't work. So, and then I had a transvestite boyfriend. But then that got a little bit confusing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he had breasts and he had a penis.
Okay.
I was like, this, I think I've gone too far now. So, I did a lot of experimentation, but I'm really glad I actually kept that last act sacred.
Mm-hmm. So what's your attitude to it now?
But when I look back, or to sexuality?
Oh, yeah, your sexuality at present, and yeah.
Sexuality now, I guess you would say, I'm very much into sacred marriage, sacred union. I've always been into the one-on-one. I can absolutely understand the interest and possibly necessity for something like polyamory. If you've only had the odd partner, you know, you've been shy, you've been suppressed or repressed, or you've been in a 30-year marriage, it would probably be wise to be more adventurous, but I've always been adventurous.
Mm-hmm.
So to continue on being adventurous, I don't need to know any more sexual adventures. So I'm really kind of like an advocate, I suppose, of the sacred union, the one-on-one committed monogamous but highly adventurous, highly explorative, holy union with another one.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing the whole thing, and as you said at the beginning of the call, seeing the whole area of relationship as the absolute path of transformation. When you commit deeply to another, you're not opting for a nice, secure, happy relationship. You're beckoning a complete transformation of heart, body, soul, and spirit. That's to me. That's what turns me on these days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to dress up anymore.
Okay. Let's see. So earlier you mentioned kind of us being British and this like social conditioning that we have. So how would you say that your own beliefs kind of relate to this whole like social context that we've come from?
Well, how it got there, I would say the Victorian period and absolutely the Catholic Church. But luckily, even when I was a kid, nakedness in the house was very normal. Mum and Dad would have a bath together. I'd see them naked all of the time. Me and Mum would have a bath together up until I was a teenager, actually. I know that might sound a bit strange, but that is the truth. Dad and I used to have a bath together, but at the age of 12, I said, no more, because breasts were growing. But we were very, very close, very affectionate. You know, even now, I'll go home for the weekend, and if Dad's out, I'll curl up on the sofa with Mum. We'll watch a movie together. And to the outside world, that can be very strange. Like, what? Two adult women cuddling? Yes, I do. So I know I had a little bit of a blessed upbringing. Despite the nakedness and the affection being really easy between us, I could feel that uncomfortable edge, because my father's the Catholic, he's the Irish Catholic, Mum is the atheist British mother. When we would be watching movies and a sex scene would come on, I could feel, and I'm a child at this point, I could feel something in the room, and it's that same bloody energy that I used to find in the tantric circles. Mm-hmm. That's called the raincoat. There's something in the room, and we're all behaving strange. And I could feel Dad's attraction to the sex scene, followed by a quick repulsion. And I could feel Mum responding. And I'm like, what bloody hell's going on? Didn't say anything, obviously. But I remember that, and it was a constant. This was a weekly feeling, because, you know, Saturday night, you sit down, you watch a movie together, mm-hmm. There's a damn good chance there's going to be a sex scene, and therefore there's a damn good chance you're going to have that weird feeling. So I wanted to know, what is this feeling? And that's probably why I went off exploring in the way that I did. Because everything was so right about life, apart from that. And the more I tuned into it, the bigger it became. It was like an elephant in the room. I'm like, hello, can you see the elephant in the room? And they're like, that, no, there's no elephant. There's something really weird going on here, and I need to know what it is. Yeah,
that's great. Okay, so how about the topics of like female empowerment or the kind of uprising of this new feminist movement as well? How would you say you relate to that?
Well, again, I'm probably the tail end of this Christian Catholic. You know, all those centuries ago, the feminine was crushed, sexuality was forbidden for the priests. And because I'm living here in medieval France, this is one of the big countries where those crusades took place. So it's a daily memory, if you like. So I guess my, you know, yay, sacred feminine, I'm coming in on that sort of Christian thing because of Mary Magdalene, and she was called a prostitute. No, she's not. She's a priestess of beautiful sacred arts. And because I work so much with men and women and all types of sexuality, I'm getting to hear how that Christian church has so much to answer for, because this is the root. This is a big influence that has done what it's done to us Westerners. So I'm like, Jesus Christ, literally, this has had such a huge effect on us. It's created this madness in the mind. So I'm really over the moon that I'm here at this time to witness and be part of this return of balance between the masculine and the feminine. and for this patriarchal system to start to weaken and wean itself out of our minds, and this crazy desire to be so masculine, to be successful and ambitious, and I have this and I have that, and now I'm going for this. It's affected women easily as much as it's affected men.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this drive to be successful and to never stop driving forward. It's very masculine. I've been part of that. I know that drive very well.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you find people reacting negatively any of the time to such, I don't want to say like radical, but, you know, sometimes just different beliefs that you have compared to the kind of traditional Christian thing?
No, never to my face. Although I do hear a few little things every now and again behind my back. And, you know, I mean, some people said, if you could just drop the Mary Magdalene thing, you'd have more people. And I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. Sorry, this is my lady, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waving her little flag. How can I not say all of this is coming from my deep love of Mary Magdalene? Mm-hmm. I absolutely feel there's a whole load of us. We're here to put her back on her throne. She belongs on a throne, right there beside Jesus. And when I say Jesus, I'm thinking long-haired hippie. I'm thinking long-haired hippie in his 20s, had a good run when he was 30. I'm not thinking divine religious figure. I'm thinking a guy who lives in Glastonbury. You know, a wafty hippie, Mary Magdalene, who was his girlfriend. That's how I see them.
Mm-hmm.
Not chosen divine beings. Just young'uns. And I don't know, I just feel so drawn to make the world realize she was not some lowly prostitute,
mm-hmm.
but a very elegant lady with absolutely essential teachings.
Mm-hmm.
She knew what she was doing.
Is there any certain texts or like trainings that you've been through or anything that you kind of draw on that informs you?
It's everything I've ever presented to the world has come from my soul. I actually call it my soul, call it my imagination. I'm being brave, basically. I have all this imagery on the inside. I haven't been trained. The only training I've had is Kundalini yoga. And I'm just being brave. I'm seeing the imagery on the inside and saying, okay, I'll do that too then. And, yeah, so I'm like, I'm sourcing everything from my own nature.
Mm-hmm.
Totally and utterly unqualified. If you know what I mean.
Yeah.
I'm really glad I haven't learnt this from someone else.
Mm-hmm.
It's a natural gift. Yeah.
Okay. Can I ask you some more about the body aspect of it? Like you mentioned the womb before, but could you say a bit more about it? Like what does it kind of do for us? What are the qualities that...
Well, I've kind of mapped, because I'm yogically trained, I have a good awareness of subtle anatomy, like nadis, meridians, chakras. And I, you know, when you study all these texts, you start to see a pattern. So I've studied Kabbalah, I've studied Sufism, I've studied a little bit of shamanic work. And so the first thing you understand is like, wow, there's a real sense of numbers here. You know, seven chakras, seven colors of the rainbow, seven, 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 seven. And so in the early days when I co-wrote Womb Wisdom, I mapped out, along with the other one, I mapped out 7 steps through the woman's body to reach the womb. I knew it wasn't enough to just drop down energetically from the third eye to the womb. That is not an authentic journey. Us ladies, we can do that. It's you're not going to feel anything. But if you energetically take the journey through the yoni, so your awareness passes through the lips, the labia, you then go past the clitoris, you then go past the G-spot, the cervix, you know, you're starting to see these parts of your body. If you have a disconnection with these parts of the body, you are so going to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Because step one has to be return home. We have to come back to this area. And this includes seeing this area. So I often say to ladies at the very beginning of this work, get a hand mirror. Your first bit of homework is to be naked, slightly open your legs, hand mirror, gazing, prayer and gazing and candles and beautiful music that makes you sensitive. You have to sit there until you can look at the yoni as normally as you'd look at your face. You've got to breathe and pray and cry and scream and sweat, whatever it takes. Until you can, number one, look at this area and not flinch. Then comes step two, touching. And I'm not touching as in masturbating, touching with love. So actually cupping the yoni, you know, like a small bird or a small child, we got to bring our heart energy down there. We've got to love this place. And so that's the kind of work that I do with the women.
Mm-hmm.
And so, again, I've made a map, let's just say a 7-stage map for a woman to take herself through the entire space of the yoni and up and into the womb and realize the womb is not just about periods and creating children. You can also create non-physical offspring. It's all your creativity. Every month your womb gets bombarded with creative energy from the egg. You know, every month, every ovulation, creativity, creativity. And of course, most ladies can go, oh God, I've got my moon cycle. What a pain in the ass. And there's no consciousness. She's not realizing this is creative potential. I've decided not to have a child this month. Okay, then what shall I create instead? And, you know, some of us are on the pill. We don't even want a period in the first place. We try and minimize it or just prevent it altogether. I remember friends of mine upping the dosage of the pill so that they could have a whole summer with no periods. Because, you know, they're in Ibiza or something. So, yeah, stuff like that.
Mm.
Stuff like that really needs to be undone.
Mm.
A woman can realize what's happening to her every month and all that energy she can use for healing, creativity, expanding parts of her character.
Mm.
So much.
And what's the effect of it if you remain disconnected from it?
I also feel very much this energy is part of the aging process. And the beauty of that woman. I'm noticing as I'm getting older, obviously, I'm starting to tune into aging, you know. And you can tell in the woman's face which one is connected to her womb and her deep sexuality, sensuality, and which one isn't. Mm-hmm. The ones who are connected, despite getting older, there is a glow and a softness in their face and body. They are beautiful. They are shining with this ease. The ones who aren't, they're tight and not what I call gnarly. Do you know what I mean by gnarly? Mm-hmm. They're like full dried up forest. They're tight. I don't like to say nasty words, but you can see the bitterness. This energy is Shakti. It's life-giving. It's life-affirming. It's joyful. It's celebratory. When you come to this energy, that's what's flooding through your body. When you don't, you're going to just turn into a dried up stone with no feeling, no sensuality, no love energy, no light of the soul. You're just going to be a machine, a factory, artificial. Yeah, mm-hmm. Nothing there.
Mm-hmm. So how does femininity interact with masculinity, and do we have them both?
Oh yes. So the masculine part of us is this is kind of like the forward moving, driving, decision making, directive, guidance part of us. This is the part of us that is ambitious. It's ambitious. It wants to do something out there in the world. It doesn't actually want to get too distracted by relationships. It likes to be on its own, and it likes to be first. I'm a Capricorn, so I really understand masculine energy. That part is always going to be there, and it's paradoxical. Because the masculine wants to be by himself. He wants to be out the front, making all the decisions, leading every part of him forward. He's got a to-do list. He's got things to do, places to go, people to see. And the feminine part of us, she doesn't even want to leave the house. She just wants to stay at home, be beautiful, make the garden even more beautiful. She wants to love, she wants connection, she wants kissing, she wants love making. And the masculine part is like, ooh, get off, I'm busy. And she's like, come. And of course that is what gets played out in a relationship. So first of all, we have to realize we've got the same thing going on too. A part of us that absolutely wants to go out there, be successful, make a name for ourselves, and leave some sort of legacy behind, whether it's children or some sort of landmark. And then the feminine part of us goes, what? That's ridiculous. Come to bed. And that's why, you know, inner union, inner sacred marriage is so important before we do these deeper conscious relationships with another one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Just to see, you know, which one am I mostly? Just see which character you are mostly. And then see if you can just balance that a little bit. And then you're in a nice place to meet another, mm-hmm. who's hopefully doing the same work or soon will do, because it's so strongly part of your life that he or she will just notice, oh, masculine, feminine. Let me have a look at that too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think maybe. Oh, actually, maybe just one more thing. What do you think of the idea of trauma and how people are able to deal with that? I kind of hear the word when I speak to people every so often. So I'm really interested to hear.
Well, my yogic body says if trauma entered the body physically, it needs to be healed from the body physically. If trauma enters the body mentally, it needs to be healed mentally, emotionally. So you need the same component. However it went in, you need the same component, not to take it away, to to lay it to rest. So I absolutely believe that people who've had sexual trespassing, sexual trauma, will need, when they're ready, a beautiful being who is willing to connect with the body physically, touch that part of the body, that absolute part of the body that was trespassed, and do their work. Now, in order to find that person, I always say to the ladies and the men, make sure the one that you choose has a heart, you have a heart connection with them. Because the touching of the body is just one part. You're touching the body so that those cells can feel the touch and go, what do you want? What do you want? You know, you're touching, you're bringing presence to that area. That's not going to do the healing. What's going to do the healing is this almighty tsunami of love. Love is what heals. So you make connection with that part of the body. This is where it happens. And then that practitioner, that therapist, that good friend, whoever, is going to sincerely love you in that moment. You're literally going to be overcome by the presence of love. And you'll feel it. And you will cry from here to kingdom come, but it's very short-lived, and then it's gone. The mistake I see people make is they choose their practitioner because they fancy their practitioner. And then it gets even more complicated because the sexual part of you is getting touched, which is going to awaken sexual energy. And because you fancy your practitioner, you're already projecting and expecting. And so when that level of love comes and it's not the romantic version, that person gets all upset again. And the healing hasn't happened. In fact, it's gone a bit deeper.
Mm-hmm.
Because now you're getting entangled. So obviously I have a lot of opinions. It doesn't mean I'm talking the truth. I'm just trying to save people from what I see.
Mm-hmm.
So I say to the ladies who've got entangled with a male practitioner, next time, choose a woman.
Mm.
And then that part isn't going to get awakened. Choose a beautiful woman who you love and trust, and you can feel her heart's presence, and she's a professional, and she's going to do this well. And if anything, there's a little bit of mother energy there. That's how you heal physical sexual abuse.
Mm.
It's at this level, it's too delicate to go with a male practitioner. I don't think any of us humans are able to administer that kind of qualitative care that must take place for the sexual abuse energy to leave, because we're still babies when it comes to sexuality. Look at all these tantra teachers, you know, in the news.
Mm.
My teacher slept with all of his students. Yeah, mine too. We're not able to handle the sexual energy yet.
Mm.
So what's the best way? Stick with your own gender whilst we do our sexual healing. And then men and women will be able to facilitate true and decent healing. But at the moment, my opinion is still a bit dodgy.
You just reminded me of another thing, though. What do you think of the broader public perception of Tantra?
Again, I think there's this feeling, and, you know, from what I've discovered, it's kind of a right feeling that it's about sex, it's about free sex, it's about swapping partners. You know, it's kind of like the next level of the 60s free love movement.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at the beginning it can be like that, but the real roots of Tantra, sexuality is only a part. it really is about balancing and harmonizing all perceived opposites, sun and moon, male and female, body and soul, light and dark. So I think, yeah, if people go Tantra, oh, you're into Tantra, right, nice. What's your number?
I think that's, I mean, I think that's about all of my questions. I'll probably think of a million more once, like later on this evening. I'll probably think of so many more things to ask you, but...
Always just drop me over an email.
Thank you. Yeah, you've been really, really informative, really helpful.
Good.
Thank
Very
you.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I send you an email just with like more information about the research and what I'll do with the recording and things like that. So
yeah, brilliant.
Just so you know.
And good luck with your endeavours.
Thank you so much, you too.
Yeah.
Enjoy your time in France.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Abby.
Okay, I'll speak to you soon. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.